Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 406. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me on this just overcast, gray, kind of cold, miserable day in Las Vegas. And Cole Coffee, if I'm being honest with you, I think this miserable, gray, overcast, cold day just kind of sums up what's going on in the world of MMA right now, man. I'm telling you.
That is a good way of putting it. That's funny. Yeah. It's like there's a cloud hanging over the start of the year for some reason.
I mean, it really does feel that way. I'm thinking, you know, we're going to get together this week for the first show of 2023, the brand new year. We're going to be talking about how much fun we had at Fury Professional Grappling 6. How good Jillian Robertson looked, just absolutely tearing through Rose Namajunas. What great matches we had. I figured we'd be talking a little bit about that. And then we transition into how just incredible the Bellator versus Ryzen event was. You know, I mean, Bellator got the clean sweep. But as we mentioned going in, I still don't think Ryzen should feel like they took an L for that. They had more people talking about them than ever. People got rejuvenated by that. I mean, it was a pride event. You know what I mean? We got to see that again. We got that nostalgia. They were taking the center. I mean, I thought we were going to get to talk about that and bask and all that. And then we'd start to set up everything that was going forward in the UFC and things that are about to happen this year. Talk about what looks like your possible return to international travel, which is, you know, getting closer and closer by the day. All those things. All those things. And we can still touch on them a little bit. But, I mean, You start with the loss of Stephen Bonner on Christmas Eve, and what a disappointment that was, and just a sad moment. And then, you know, I think about the conversation we had. You know, the last time we remembered being with Stephen Bonner was in person. You know, Phil Baroni was there as well, right? And now Phil Baroni arrested on suspicion of murder, according to all reports out there down in Mexico. And that's just, I mean, just to fathom that, to wrap your head around it.
Do we put that in motion?
please tell me we didn't feed that into the world. But that, so that in itself is putting my head around. And then, of course, I mean, the Dana White situation and the New Year's Eve incident, and that's all that anybody's talking about right now, and understandably so. And, dude, it just, I'll be honest with you, man, it just drains me. I'm like, I love the sport, and I love the fights, and I still am passionate about it. But right now, just feels like a hard time to be a fan, man.
Yeah, and it's not even just like that, and it's also coupled with the NFL, just to put it together. Oh. You know, like the whole sports thing, watching what happened to Hamlin out there. I mean, like, we say this all the time about MMA, you know, like there's going to be a point at some point we might see somebody actually die in the cage or die immediately after from their injuries. I remember watching that happen there, and you're just like, holy shit, this is football where we don't really even sort of think about that. We think of maybe head injuries, we think of concussions, we think of little things like that. Watch him make a play, stand up, and then immediately drop, and then to see the ramifications after that, it's like,
scary.
What the hell is going on with the start of this year and sports in general? And that's about anything that you can see. You know, for a while there, you know, obviously this Dana stuff is definitely taking the airwaves of a lot of these sports channels, but bigger is that focus with the NFL, which makes sense, you know, in the sense of the real idea of life and death, and, you know, moments where, you know, we see these athletes going out there for entertainment, and we're always like, yeah, great, entertain us, you know, and then the back of our minds, we think about how their safety is paramount and what's going on. Then to actually see it again play out in front of you, like, wow, like, this is real life or death shit, you know, and it just kind of, you know, I hope the best for this guy. I mean, from, you know, everything that we saw and what he's going through, I mean, he's going to have a hard road back. You know, I hope everything works out. You know, I'm glad that we didn't get already bad news at this point. When I heard that they did the CPR and they had to, you know, were doing the defibrillation and all the other sort of stuff there on the field, I was like, man, he might not make it through the night. So the fact that, you know, people that are religious, your prayers seem to be doing something. People that are putting out good vibes, and him being a great athlete, he's pushing through, and I hope everything works out with that. But it just, this year starting off really effing crazy. You know, we always go into every year hoping for a great start, and maybe if this is getting all the bad shit right out of the way, you know, maybe there's a positive. But if this is setting the tone, you know, for this year, it's a very ominous start. to what we're seeing right now, you know. But
just a handful of days in.
Just a handful of days in. And I just felt like we, you know, I know we don't talk NFL and we don't talk about other stuff, but it just makes a lot of sense.
It's a story that's big enough to cross over. And it is one that, and this is, again, we've had this conversation before about, you know, tweeting about something. Like, do you really need to weigh in on something? Are you really adding anything to the conversation?
Right.
I did tweet that night because I was thinking of exactly what you mentioned. You know what I mean? That, listen, this is scary. You know, I was playing video games with my son, actually, and in my group chat, our CFSC group chat, somebody texted, wow, this NFL injury looks real serious. I'm like, well, that's a weird thing. I mean, we don't talk
you
about
don't
the
really,
NFL.
Yeah.
And CFSC.
Yep.
So I was like, let me turn this on. Like, if it's popping up in our group chat, let me. And then you start seeing the enormity of what was going on. And it really, it hit me the same way, because I've said this several times over the years, but, you know, the one that really stood out to me the most, I think, in my entire career was John Hathaway in Macau when Dong Young Kim hit him, and just the sound that it made, the way his body felt, and how lifeless he was, that I actually thought he was dead, if I'm being honest with you. And for until I could see it, you know, I mean, there's been some scary knockouts, but this one was just different to where you had that hollowness in you where you're like, oh, my God. And look, I touched
Rose
on this
Dominic
before.
Eunice and
boy, that was a bad one too, right on the head,
on
the neck.
Head.
So you
like,
wonder.
I was like, please move.
And there are these reminders that as much as this is a sport, a game, if you want to call it that, but I don't think it is. You know, a sport for sure. It is hand to hand combat. It is martial arts. And when you say these guys are and gals are putting their health and safety on the line, it's not just, you know, a little cliche that you're saying there. They really are.
They really
and I think that there's those reminders every now and then. And where it always resonates with me is I just think, now granted, they're all doing it for money and it's the job that they've chosen and you can make all those excuses. But just when I see these criticisms and this trash talking to people and the social media insults and all this, and then you get these stark reminders like, don't forget, they can step into that cage. They can step onto that field and never step out again. You know what I mean? And when these athletes say, you know, I mean, you think about the glory of Israel Adesanya and Kelvin Gastelum, you know, he said, I'm ready to die. And you hear guys say, you know, I'm stepping in there, I'm ready to die. And you have to remember that that is not just them being dramatic. I mean, they really do have to embrace that, encompass that, and be prepared that that is an actual real possibility. However, hopefully unlikely it may be, it is an actual very real possibility. It is a scary reminder. I mean, I've touched on it before, but you know, Kevin Ioli, you talk with him. He's been ringside for 7 different boxers losing their life, and that's just unbelievable. And fortunately, that sport has tried to take some steps to being safer. You know, increased medical testing, increased understanding of CTE, and all those things. And you know, they went away from the 15 round title fights, and you know, they've taken steps forward. But I will say, you know, the first time and gosh, I even hate to say this, but it's just the honest truth. I don't think it's a matter of if. I think it's a matter of when that we have seen. We have seen it on the smaller stage, of course, but I think there'll be a time that we see it at the UFC level or one of these other major levels as well. And it's just a scary thought. And yes, thoughts go out to the entire organization and to the athlete. I mean, that was just a scary situation in the NFL. And as you said, it was like, at first, I thought for sure Tamar Hamlin was gone, and then you hear, okay, no, he made it through the night, and he's improving in terms of his respirator percentage and all that. So it's like, okay, great, he's not gone, but then you have to come to the very real understanding that just because he's not gone doesn't necessarily mean that like he's going to be back 100%, and he, you know, A, not even a talk of playing, but B, just having a normal life moving forward. We don't know if that's even going to be possible, and
right.
That's just
the fact
it's impactful, man.
You know, especially when people think, oh, well, I hope he can get back to play the game. Like, you got to make sure you can function, you know. And even like it was, you know, on the interview that you were listening to a second ago, you know, there might be the possibility that this guy's going to need assistance for the rest of his life.
100%.
You know, I mean, it really does make it a very somber, you know, thing where, you know, we have to keep that in the back of the mind that, you know, while we watch these sports and these athletes for our little side, you know, when we have downtime, when you have a little bit of life where you can carve out those moments and we watch this, and to think that somebody possibly their whole life is going to change in this moment, it just kind of really just brings it down the moment to where you're just like, wow, like every moment is special. Every moment in your life, you know, pay attention to your family, pay attention to your health, pay attention to all the important stuff, because at any particular moment, you know, something, you know, crazy or out of the blue can change all that, you know. I don't know. I don't, it's such a crazy topic, and I feel like I'm like, man, like this is, I feel like going down a rabbit hole, and it's just like, man, I don't want to take the podcast down into a Debbie Downer.
Well, we always try to make this fun, you know what I mean? We're not today, but sometimes we're cracking some frosty beverages.
Got
you
a coffee right now?
For many years, for many years, it was a consistent every time. Now we've kind of slowed down a little bit as we're both trying to get a little bit better in life.
Well, New Year's Eve fucked me up. New Year's Eve and around Christmas set me back.
Set you back a little bit. You know,
I can't take hangovers like I used to. I did it like Christmas Eve, and I was like, okay, kid, you did okay. And then New Year's Eve, I'm like, I'm not going to drink. And of course, I end up drinking, watching like Buckeyes and watching the Michigan. And then I got all sad and like upset about that. Oh. And I drank for like 10 hours at a bar.
And I can't even make fun of you.
Dude, and then the next day I felt like dog shit, and I haven't even thought about even sniffing alcohol since then.
Good for you.
So I'm just at this point, I'm like, okay, you had your fun, but I feel like it set me back for days, like even just like wanting to get into the gym. I still did, but I feel like poop. But yeah.
We try to have fun here is what we're saying.
Have fun.
But this story is big enough, man. I think this was so impactful for everybody. And
it could change. I mean, I think things can change. It's certainly going to change the things, like, you know, some of the things we're hearing on that interview about it, brand new players that come in, whether they have the insurance and the means to take care of themselves.
I wish I could cite it right now, and I've scrolled way past it at this point. It's a Cleveland sports talk show host, and he brought up some incredible points talking about the fact that, hey, just because he's in the NFL and injured on the field, don't think that automatically means he's covered for the rest of his life,
right?
Because he's not. And you would assume that if he gave his body in the line of service on the football field, that he absolutely is taking care of for the rest of his life, and it's only the right thing to do.
And that carries over to MMA.
100%.
What happens if somebody gets maimed or severely injured to where they can't physically handle themselves in the cage? What is set out? There's nothing set out by the UFC. They'll say that they're going to pay for their medical. The medical cost is usually the immediate after the fight. But I don't know of anything built in long term for their care, because we've never actually seen
it. What if somebody is injured such in a fight that they have to be on, you know, medical support the rest of their life, 25, 30 years?
I thought Rose. I said earlier, I was like, I was praying for movement. I was hoping for movement. When she took that slam, I immediately thought that she could have been paralyzed the way that she landed on her head.
Right.
What would have happened at that point? Is the UFC going to step up and say, we're going to provide her with health care or with a care provider for the rest of her life?
And
I've
listen,
never heard anything like that.
I think they would try to do their best. You're talking about a former champion, a very popular figure. I don't know that there's anything guaranteed. And I'm not saying there's not. I have not read the insurance policy word for word.
And you made a good point. A high profile versus prelim guy.
Put somebody on the prelims, throw you some bucks.
Are they going to get the same treatment?
No, they're not. And this, to me, and again, I don't know that it will, but this story is big enough in the fact that we're talking about an NFL game and we're talking about health and safety. And it looked to me like the entire sports world is focused on this. And this is the kind of stuff that would be addressed in a collective bargaining agreement if mixed martial artists could get together and form an association or union. Now, there's one thing that I've always said, and I've been covering the sport long enough, I've seen enough starts and stops, and I've just kind of lost hope for it, because I've kind of just come to the understanding that what's good for Conor McGregor isn't necessarily the same as what's good for Joe Smith off the street. That just joined, and how do you level the playing field to get everybody on the same page? And ultimately, it's because it normally comes down to money. When we're talking about collective bargaining, what are we normally talking about? We're talking about fighter pay. That's what's normally at stake here. But what if we're talking about athlete health and safety, and we're talking about, you know, lifelong care? Maybe that's something that would motivate athletes a little bit more to get together and say, hey, man, let's put together the deal about income and pay, and we'll put that aside for now. We'll deal with that later. Right now, let's just make sure that we all get on the same page and we figure out some form of you know, and I don't want to say insurance because that's not the right word, but let's ensure that our, you know, future care is taken care of should we ever get, you know, permanently injured or, God forbid, even lose our lives in the octagon, that it's taken care of. And again, if I'm just being realist, no, I have not. I have kind of lost faith in the fact that everybody will get to be on the same page. But I wonder if this, and this story is far from over, if this could be what gets people together to get on the same, if this could be the rallying cry, if this could be the touch point where people say, okay, I know we're not all agreeing on everything out there, but our own health and safety is enough for us to put our differences aside and to get on the same page. I'm not overly optimistic, but it would be a different way to go about it because the financial side of it hasn't been enough to get everybody on the same page, and I don't know that it ever will be.
Yeah. Crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. But, yeah. Fuck. How do we transition from that?
Well, I know. And I guess we go from that gray cloud, terrible topic to now we go to the Dana White incident on New Year's Eve.
Just as gray.
Terrible. I mean, absolutely terrible. And listen, I will come out. Now, first of all, I've already seen all the insults on Twitter. Oh, you're not going to say anything. Oh, you're up his ass. Da 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 da. It's annoying. It's annoying. But whatever.
Does this ass smell like Fuck It Friday food?
Probably so. Probably so. But listen, first and foremost, let me just say there is absolutely no defending what Dana White did. And to his credit, he came out and said the same thing. You know, he said, look, there's no excuses for what I did. Alcohol was involved. However, that doesn't matter. I think, you know, saying that alcohol was involved might just help speak to the state of mind, but it doesn't make anything right. And this crew, and I haven't seen a ton of it, but I have seen a little bit of it, where people are saying, well, she hit him first, so it is what it is. Like, no.
Yeah.
That is not a legitimate discussion point. That should not even – now, could you say – she hit him first, so she's in the wrong. Yeah, and if you want to press charges against her, but you walk away. You don't because she's aggressive to you does not give you as a man the right to hit a woman back. You know what I mean?
It's 100. She looked about 100 bucks, 100 pounds, maybe 110. I don't know what the weight is. He's a grown ass man.
That's what it boils. And right, and again, don't be sexist. Equality, all that. But let's be honest. You know what I mean?
That's not equality.
No, you know what I mean. Like that. You just don't. And honestly, I mean, you shouldn't hit anybody. Period. You know, especially drunken party, whatever the case may be.
Use your words.
Yeah, use your words. Use your words. But I will just first and foremost say this: there is no excusing what UFC President Dana White did. It was horrible, and it shouldn't be done. And again, if a woman hits you as a man, you got to walk away. It's period. You got to walk away. But that said, I'm not of the opinion that he necessarily needs to lose his position because of that. I see a lot of people say, got to get him out of there, man. He can't be in there anymore. He cannot be the president of the UFC anymore. I don't necessarily agree with that. Now, let me say this. Let's say he had slapped a female employee in the UFC office. Now you got to go. You know what I mean? Like, that's a work. I don't necessarily tie the two things. Things that happen in your personal life, I don't think that necessarily the result of that should mean that you lose your professional life. Now, I know I may be in the minority about that, but I will say this. That's just the way I feel. I've always felt the way. And if you go back and listen to any years of this, you'll hear the same thing. I've talked about these incidents that happen outside. I feel they need to be addressed. I feel like you need to be held legally responsible. If she wants to file assault charges, file assault charges. If she wants to file a civil suit, now it sounds like they're going to work that out in their personal life. But I'm saying, yes, you got to answer for all that. But I don't know that it necessarily means that you got to be pulled out of your job as UFC president. That said, now, if Disney or ESPN decide otherwise and they say, we don't like that look, we don't want that, I will not argue one bit. That's their responsibility as a company. If they feel that way, I certainly would not sit here and say that's wrong of them to let him go. But I will also not say that I think they need to let him go or they're making a mistake. That's for them as a company to decide. What I would say is that I would love to see Dana White personally and the UFC as an organization commit some resources. His own personal time. Obviously, they got a lot of financial things available to them. Domestic violence awareness, domestic violence assistance, whatever you can be to speak out against domestic violence, to help victims of domestic violence. I mean, I'm not saying that you can take this and make it good, but you can at least try to pivot and make something good come out of it. You know, I mean, I can see the commercials in my mind of, you know, UFC athletes just saying, you know, standing in the octagon and being like, hey, what's okay here? And then flash to somewhere else. It's like, it's not okay out here. And I know that's cheesy. Like, I mean, that may not be the best idea, but you know what I'm saying? And I know a commercial, a public service now, I know that doesn't do, but they can do more and they can do a lot more of it. And so, I do 100%. It feels like you have to be on one side or the other, and I guess I'm just not. On the one hand, I do not feel that Dana White should – I don't think the apology from to TMZ should be enough. Yeah. I don't. I feel like there should be more about it. But I don't feel like he necessarily has to be outed from his job. There's no way he can continue as UFC president.
Right.
And it just feels like everybody's on one way or the other, either like, oh, dude, it's Dana, and she hit him, like, leave him alone, or – B, you know, you got to get this guy out of there. And I think it's somewhere in between. I think he should be absolutely be held accountable. I don't necessarily think he has to be relieved of his duties. That said, if ESPN or Disney decides he does, that's their decision as a company, and I can't fault them for it. Me personally, I don't think it needs to happen. And I've said that before. Again, I've stayed consistent with this about this. I don't like bad things that happen outside of work areas, but I don't think that that necessarily should cost you your career either. So I don't know, man. It's just a shitty situation, to be honest with you. And you know, like I said, I know education isn't necessarily key. Like I mean, I teach my kid that. Like, hey, man, I know you go train martial arts, but you don't get to beat people up on the schoolyard, and especially not a woman. You know what I mean? It's wrong. But I don't think it necessarily means like the guy's got to go or the UFC has failed terribly here.
Yeah. And it would be interesting. I would like to see something come from the UFC, at least some sort of statement at some point, just saying something. You know, the fact to just be quiet and let the only thing to be out there be this, you know, quasi press release on TMZ and this interview that Dana did. You know, I'm glad that he at least stepped up and said something. But it just feels weird that the UFC is not coming out and at least making some sort of point on that. But I think you're right. I mean, I think if there is a point where Dana can put some resources, especially his own time and money, into these sort of things, I think that's the best avenue. I'm not sure about the PSAs with the fighters, because I think as long as Dana's still at the helm, people are going to be like, this doesn't ring true, because you have fighters saying one thing, but then you just slap the wrist of your president. But I mean, I think it is good that they put money, that they did do something, but I think if, you know, a lot of people have said, you know, if they want Dana to be gone or whatever, you know, I don't think by just removing him from his job is going to do anything to help the situation. But I think if he did self sort of step back and step and took some time away and volunteered some time at maybe at a domestic abuse center, maybe him and his wife both go in there. They're definitely, when I watched the video, you know, Amish, I first did notice I saw her slap and I saw him retaliate. But then you watch the video a couple more times, you see her sort of having a moment. He comes over, he grabs her, she slaps him after he grabbed her pretty strongly. So then it's like, okay, did she initiate it or was she just responding to him? You know, that definitely looked like there was a moment where something that an argument that was definitely alcohol fueled got crazy and out of hand. But regardless of whatever, if she slapped you, the you just don't retaliate back. You just suck it up and have one of your friends separate you two. You don't immediately lash back at it. But I would think it'd be a great move if Dana was not the active face of the company right now. Do I say he doesn't need to be the president? No, I'm just saying don't go out and go to press conferences. Don't go out and don't do any PR work unless it's you going out and saying, hey, by the way, I'm going to this domestic violence thing and we're going to spend some time. I'm going to talk to some people. I'm going to donate some of my own money to this thing. I want to go, you know, me and my wife are going counseling. I would love to see a thing saying that him and his wife are going counseling. But what I don't need is him coming out and promoting UFC 283 or promoting, you know, the event in Brazil. I don't think he should travel to Brazil, even though he said he was going to go to Brazil. I think his time and his focus should be on this and covering this. But that doesn't mean he is going to do him any good for just him to lose his job.
I think the caveat that you laid there is perfect. Because I heard something, and I saw like Kevin O'Leary had a call. He's like, I think Dana should step away briefly, right?
Yeah.
And I started thinking about that. And I understand what he's saying. Like, and to his point, Kevin is trying to say he should be held accountable, right?
Right.
But I started thinking about, what does that mean he steps away? There's events he doesn't go to now. You know what I mean? So it's like stepping away. Okay, so what? Dana just doesn't show up. So what? It's not like, okay, but it's, hey, but we're suspending him without pay. So what? You know what I mean? He doesn't. So that's what kind of bothered me about people saying he needs to step away and be out of the limelight. I'm like, well, what does that accomplish? There's events that he doesn't go to now. It's not like it would be any different. Yeah. But what you said is spot on. He doesn't. He steps away for a little while, and in the meantime, while he's doing that, the appearances that are made are, hey, by the way, we're going to counseling. Hey, by the way, I'm going.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
No fuck it Fridays.
Dude,
if you know now, you know. Stop all that stuff.
I agree with that. Stop that stuff for a while. My wife is very involved in the community here in Las Vegas, and twice in the last month or so, and maybe it picks up around the holidays or stuff because people are together, I don't know, but twice she's had to, and I'm not names or anything, but she's had to solicit like food and clothes and household items for women who have had to get out of abusive relationships, you know what I mean, have made the decision to leave their house, and in both cases it was for the safety of their child, which is scary. I mean, oh my God, I'm going to get emotional now, like my wife talking about it, like, hearing that a kid is scared of his dad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's bad. You know, that's really bad. But to the point is that, you know, you have these shelters and, you know, you have these. Can you imagine the amount of resources that the UFC and Dana White personally could lend to situations like that where people can get back up on their feet when they have to step out? That's what I want to see, not pull him out of the UFC. That's what I don't get. That guy needs to go from the UFC. What does that accomplish? Right. It doesn't make anything in the world better. It's just you're saying that that guy's out. Do something that makes
an actual difference.
That makes a difference. That can do something good in the world. I think there's a way to do that, you know? And
I mean, it would certainly be a better spent time, but I agree with – I mean, like, he just needs to step away. I mean, that doesn't mean you can't matchmake behind closed doors. You can't have your board meetings and can't do all the other stuff that you need to do to run the company. But focus on what matters. If you're going to be out publicly facing, you need to be covering and fixing this what happened. You need to, one, fix your relationship, fix you know, just the public face, because in a sense, you just put a huge mark on his career, his legacy, and not that people are like, oh, who cares about Dana's legacy? I mean, but just as anybody, as a person, you make mistakes in your life. If you could fix your mistakes and try to overcome that, you're going to do a lot of good. So,
yes.
I mean, I think if he can not worry about, like, as I jokingly said, like the fuck it Fridays, who you know,
so
whatever,
but
like,
so
just
tone deaf,
stay away from that stuff. Yeah.
It'd be tone deaf
thing,
right now.
The last thing you want to do next week is see a fuck it Friday or like a, you know, if you don't know, now you know. It's like, bro, because then all the memes are like, well, bro, what don't we know? What don't we know goes on at home?
100%.
You know, all this other stuff. Again, I agree. I don't think just having him walk away is enough, because what does that really do to help the problem? It doesn't do anything to fix the problem.
Yeah.
All it does is somebody's like, ha ha, yeah.
We got him.
We got one.
We got him.
We got him. I would rather him just take time away from the daily, day-to-day operations.
Yeah, would that change the culture of the promotion? Would that help improve anything? Would that?
No.
No, you got it. You just have a very rich man who will live in his extravagant life anyway. Would he be any more encouraged to actually, you know, if it's like, hey, we're going to let you stick around, but you got to do this to show us you're serious about this. You know, you got to go to counseling.
Right.
You got to take part in community service. Like, that to me is way better than saying, you know what, dude, you're out. Now go take your super wealthy ass and go sit on your yacht and regret all of this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'll be all right. Thanks. No. Prove to me you want to stick around. You know what I mean?
And what would be great is if they immediately just jumped on it and started doing that, this people would stop talking about it.
Right.
It's going to be on the airwaves. It's going to be, people are going to be talking about it, because people are like, people are just mad. People are angry. People saw something that totally disgusts them. They want to see a fix to it.
Right.
So the UFC needs to get out and about in front of it, and Dana needs to get out and about it and do something about it more than what he's already done. I mean, you can't just go to TMZ and be like, okay, well, I said enough.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking forward to next week's fights. You know, like, that's not enough to placate, you know, the masses and placate the people that want to see something. I mean, it's hard to take a blind eye to it, especially when this is the guy that has said in the past, you know, like, there's one thing you don't do, and this is it. You know?
The one thing about that, and I will say this, and obviously he said it, you don't come back from putting your hands on a woman, right? But then we've seen it happen over. Like, see, now that would be a different situation. If really, you know, because everybody points to that hardline quote and says, Dana, this is what you said. You got to abide by it. But the UFC has never abided by that.
Yeah.
Now, had the UFC all these years had just been like, domestic violence, done, out, you're gone. We don't put up with that here. If they had taken that hardline stance and then Dana does it and they go, it's a little, then at that point, you got it. Nope. Sorry. You have totally said that you don't stand for this.
Yep.
But he took that quote, and then over the years, it didn't pan out that way. So that to me is why it's like, well, let's be honest. It's not like they ever abided by that. If they did, then I would say 100%. If you fired everybody involved in the sport that had a domestic violence issue, then you now have to fire yourself.
Yeah. It's just, oh, man. It's fired up, because, I mean, I grew up, you know, and it's fun. Well, not funny. I say it because I feel like, you got to say that before you start getting the emotional sort of stuff. I grew up in an abusive household that my parents separated because of alcoholism. So, I mean, like, that shit changes you when you're around that sort of stuff. So you want to provide a platform that helps people out there that are possibly seeing this and giving them a way out. And if there's any possible way to make a good thing come out of this shitty thing, The UFC needs to look at doing that sort of thing. Dana needs to look at that and step up and do that sort of stuff. I mean, obviously there's going to be discussions and there's talks that happens within their family, and that's fine. I don't need to know about all that sort of stuff.
I agree.
But I would love to know that, you know, Dana's doing something to help other people that might be stuck in a shitty situation that have to deal with some of that sort of stuff. And you're right, you know, with the women, a lot of the shelters, there's tons of women's shelters. In fact, Agent H, like, she grew up, there were parts of her life where she actually stayed at a women's shelter because of an abusive relationship with her stepdad or whatever at the time. So, like, those sort of things have always sort of been a big thing in my life. So when you see something happen, just because this guy is, in a sense, the biggest thing after Conor McGregor in the sport when it comes to name, you just want to see the right thing sort of happen, you know. Find some way to make a positive out of something that is a terrible, terrible situation. And making rash judgments and just, you know, putting your kicking your pitchfork on your flaming thing and want to go burn the house and chase the monster out, just getting that quick reaction isn't going to get the most benefit and fix the most people outside of this initial situation.
Mm-hmm.
There's thousands and thousands of households that are dealing with domestic violence and other stuff. If there's a way that they can make some sort of a positive to affect change that can help others, fuck, maybe we can get something good out of this situation.
And Dana is a very public figure, man. You know, yeah. I mean, obviously a lot of people look up to him. You know yeah. what I mean? And it is, I applaud him for saying there's no excuses. This is inexcusable. Yeah. I'm embarrassed.
Thank
I messed
God
up.
He came out and said something. I
applaud him for that.
Yeah.
But I agree. It's not enough. Let's see what we can do from here. I'm not calling for your head.
Right.
But let's if you're going to stick around, let's do something good about it. You know, and
fair enough.
We'll see how it plays out. Now, secondary, by far. By far. But if you're TBS, can you still put on the Power Slap League?
I mean,
it doesn't have his name on it anymore, and maybe they could go. I'm sure he's all in it in terms of editing. I don't know how. You know, it was Dana White's thing. Eventually, they took his name out of it, so it's just the Power Slap League. But I got to think that his I mean, he's got to be in scenes there. He has to be doing. I haven't seen any of it yet.
Yeah, I haven't either. But I can see where they can completely make that show and him never actually have to be any part in it. I could see where
like re-edit it and just if he was in it, just re-edit it.
I mean, I could see where, like, I didn't even think about that. I didn't expect to see him in any episode.
Hmm.
I could see where, yes, maybe they thought, well, man, it's not going to work the same without you. But if they're taking his name off of it, my thought is that he has no actual physical part in the show.
Yeah,
and that might be by design. You know, where they wanted something that stands alone and separate, and not completely tied to the UFC.
Right.
Everything that has Dana in it, it's hard for them to not say this is a UFC thing.
Right.
I think they wanted to build this and have legs that where it could live on its own. So
yeah,
I'm thinking that maybe it can be okay. I mean, it's just unfortunate. It sucks because people are already making the connection between
right.
the two, the slap and the slap.
I don't know. There's people that hate it regardless. I get that. I'm just saying. I just wonder if this is one of those situations where even TBS is like, oh my God, like,
isn't
we
TBS
can't
the same network
do this.
That has like Zombie, their big, The Walking Dead? Isn't that TBS?
I think that's AMC, isn't it?
Oh, AMC. I don't know. I haven't watched in a while. But I mean, I can see where a network might be like, but if they're going to say, well, you know, this isn't really his product. I mean, yes, it's by the same company, but his name's not on it or whatever. I don't know if I'd see them just walk away from it. Maybe they will, but I mean, they've been really planning on it. I can see where they'll make some justification to say, well, you know, it's not really his thing, you know, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But you never know. They could. I guarantee a lot of the other people involved, if that did, would be very, very upset.
Mm-hmm.
Pilgrim, Ari, all those cats, man. They've done a lot of time and effort to build this thing. I think that probably shows a lot of things going forward for any other pet project they maybe want to start. You know, how much involvement do they, you know, how much in the forefront do they want to have him attached if this doesn't get fixed, you know? There's a reason why they have Dana part of it, because he is that face.
He's been the face.
He's been out there thrown it in everybody's face at every other UFC event, you know, promoting it. I could see why they needed it, but it certainly, that's got to be something on the back of their mind, like, you know, wow, you know, can we do big project launches like this if we know we can't completely, if our house isn't in order?
Yeah.
You know?
I will say, by the way, there is a UFC event, of course, here in Las Vegas next week at the UFC Apex.
Yeah.
That
nobody seems to be caring about.
If Dana White does show up to the pre-fight or post-fight, I do intend to ask him about this. I will say this, to your point, I agree that in terms of where him and his family stand, I don't really think that's any of our business, so I won't be asking necessarily about – I don't know, maybe – I mean, he said that they've already made amends. I don't know that I necessarily need to ask about his personal life, but I would like to ask, hey, you know, this is the first time we've seen you since the incident. We got your apology the first night. What have you done in the time since to kind of move this forward, or, you know, to maybe make adjustments in your own life? You know, I don't know that you necessarily, you know, have you resolved this with your family? I mean, he did say he was worried about his kids, so maybe you could say, you know, is the relationship okay with the children? But to be honest with you, like, that seems a little bit like, I don't need to know that. That's your personal life. But what have you done professionally, and are you intending on taking any steps? And, you know, hey, we know there's a fighter code of conduct. You know, did that apply to you in this position? And, you know, was there any thought of what the company might do in terms of how they react to this? Or did you think about something that you could maybe self, you know, regulate yourself, so to speak? So, I mean, if he's there, I certainly intend on asking. The next big event is Brazil. As you said, he had promised to go to Brazil because they are launching the new TV deal. It's the return there in a long time. We'll see if that stays true. I don't know. The criticism online about, like, you soft-ass journalist. Like, we're all asking to talk to him. Like, he's not doing interviews right now. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
I don't think he's going to be there. And he really shouldn't. He's got other things he needs to be taken care of. This fight, I mean, like, at this point, the fight's done.
Right.
Dana doesn't need to be there on fight night. That's why we've seen he's able to show up on some.
Well, that's what I said. Like, for him to step away, what does that mean? Yeah. Everybody else does everything.
He needs to be away from the public eye right now. You know, he just needs to stay away and work on the things. And if he does come, you know, I think it makes sense to give him the platform to say something. I personally don't need to dive deep down, because one, I have my own internal issues that the material is just not comfortable for me,
right?
Because it brings up my own memories of shit,
right?
But it doesn't mean I'm gonna not record it if somebody asks the questions, you know, and it should be good to give them that platform. But I mean, do we need to be that guy that couldn't drop the Stipe Miocic, you know, heavyweight question in the back to just be an ass, you know, and keep driving the drum? Because then at that point, then the night just shuts down, you know,
right?
Because then at that point, you know, we might not get any other answers. I mean, I think you got to ask it if he shows up, but also don't drive it to the point where nothing else is able to be asked, because he'll get upset and just leave or whatever.
And I'll say this, and I think anybody that listens to this podcast probably knows, because we've talked about this a little bit before, but like, press conferences are the worst place to ask a question where you want a real answer, okay?
Yeah.
For a number. Now, I will say the post-fight ones, like at the Apex where it's a little bit smaller, or even at the pay-per-views where it's just where it's not the big audience thing. But when you're talking about the big stage, the dais, the crowd, that is the worst place to ask a question if you want a real answer. Number one, Dana can't hear very well, and he can kind of use that as an excuse to just be like, what? I don't even, you know, and give a different answer. The other thing is, the crowd will start booing because they support Dana more than they support you asking that question. So they're going to start booing. Maybe the fighters will be like, come on, let's move on.
And you'll never follow up.
So, exactly.
Someone will never follow up.
The next time somebody gets into a one-on-one situation, he can just be like, I already addressed that at the press conference. It's like, well, no, you didn't. So I don't know. Hopefully anybody that's watching here, like if for whatever reason he doesn't show up next week, if for whatever reason he is at the press conference and somebody doesn't ask him at the press conference, I will say – I kind of understand that, because it's the worst possible place to get an actual real answer out of him. But the next time he does appear in public, I do completely agree. There should be a follow-up. The TMZ interview wasn't enough. It just wasn't. And we need to know what are the next steps moving forward. You know what I mean? So, oh, man. I mean, there's no even – did you watch Fury Grappling? Did you watch Bellator versus Ryzen?
I did watch the Fury Grappling. The Bellator – no, I'm one of the ones that got spoiled because of the teasers and everybody letting it out. And then the next day I was like, I'm going to go ahead and watch it. And then I was like, well, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, it's already over. And then I kind of forgot about it. And then I was like, I could get that. And I was like, I don't care.
Yeah. It's so weird though, right? Like, even though stuff that we care about, like when it's not live, it's like, I got other stuff going on. And I feel so bad.
I certainly cared about when it happened. I was like, what? Should I try to pirate? Should I whatever? And I was like, just stop.
Oh, I got into such a battle. And I was on a plane, and I needed to be sleeping because I was still up from the grappling event on the way home. I fell asleep at like 5 o'clock on New Year's Eve, dude. That's gone for the night. I'd been up for like 36 hours. But I
was still drinking at the bar.
I got into it. I saw Ohio State lost by 1 point, right?
Oh, brother.
Was it entertaining? It had to be intense.
We were up like – At one point, we had like a 14-point lead. We lost like in the fourth quarter.
Oh, heartbreaking. So you're like, what time's the national championship game again? I got to block it out of my calendar.
Part of everybody was like, most Buckeyes were like, man, we're not getting blown out. Because we were going in that one like, just please don't blow us out.
Right.
Don't make it embarrassing. And then all of a sudden we're like, holy cow, we might win this thing, you know. And then universe going to universe, you know. But, no, it was a great game. Even the Michigan game before that was a really, really good game. So they were both really good games. Big Ten represented. But, man, yeah, we fell short at the end, and I was just heartbroken. I mean, it came down to like a 50-yard field goal, and the guy got a bad hold. And then the kick was even worse. It was like flying, like horizontal spinning. It was just as soon as it left, we were just like, and I was like, another beer, please.
Oh, man.
In fact, give me a tequila to go with it.
That's crazy, dude. I saw the score, and I didn't see any of the game whatsoever. And I was like, oh, no, Coke Coffee's going to be heartbroken, man.
I was bummed.
But, yeah, so I was getting into it on Twitter because I saw a lot of people coming at Bellator for like, I can't believe Bellator screwed this up and they put this on tape delay. And I'm like, guys, you realize that nobody at Bellator was like, hey, Showtime, can you do us a favor? We really don't want this thing to air live. Can you please make sure that it airs via delay? I mean, there's television contract. First of all, it's a Showtime deal, number one, but it's also a Ryzen deal, number two. They have their own TV deals out there. They're trying to sell pay-per-views. You know, even though these are the hurdles of co-promotion that we talk about, that we say, hey, man, co-promotion is awesome, and we stand for it, of course, and we hope that it happens. However, please do understand, you know, that these are the type of business operations that make this thing difficult. So, I don't know. I wasn't trying to jump up there and be a white knight for Bellator or whatever, but I just felt bad that everybody was kind of hammering them. And I'm like, dude, I know everybody at Bellator right now can't say a damn thing publicly, but in their heart, you know, they were all like, you don't think we want this thing on live as well? But, you know, but we can't. But I love the event, man. And I don't know. I thought the cautionary tale that you gave last week was so spot on, where it's like, because I said coming in, look, I think this could be a Bellator sweep, although I do think that Archuleta and McKee are in for the toughest fights. I think it played out that way. I think that proved to be the case. But it went 5-0. But, you said it spot on, which was, if it goes 5-0 either way, don't slam the other organization. You know what I mean? Like, good on them that they all agreed to do this. And I did watch it via tape delay. I will say it certainly did take the excitement out of it. You're 100% right. Avoiding spoilers
is impossible. Well, especially if you have your own messaging chat from your coworkers. And I was like, I can't turn that off. And I was like, well, I give up. We did talk last week about the co-promotion thing. And we talked about I just thought it was kind of interesting because a day ago this article came out about why Dana doesn't co-promote and stuff. And Bloody Elbow came out with an article yesterday talking about an interview that McCarthy did where they asked why Dana doesn't do co-promotions. And he said he did try it with Pride.
Right.
Back with Chuck Liddell and Rico Rodriguez and things like that. And he didn't get anything in return. They said, oh, we're going to send over Sakuraba. They never did, and so he was like, I got burned. I'm not going to allow someone to burn me again.
100%.
You know?
100%.
So just kind of like what we said before. One, he knows they're the A-side and doesn't need to do it, but, I mean, you put all your heart in that. And that was probably something he put his heart and soul into, especially back in those days.
Oh, yeah.
He probably was like, dude, this is the greatest thing ever, and then had it completely shit on him, and then he was just like, never again.
Yep.
That's like getting, you know, that first time a woman breaks your heart, and you're like, I'm never going to open up my heart again. Love again.
So true. So true. Nah, but I praise Bellator and Ryzen for doing this, and I hope it leads to more co-promotions throughout the sport, because I think it's only great. And it was so great to see the whole, you know, end of year thing and just how excited everybody was. I mean, Archuleta's walk in was something else.
Both of their walk-ins were crazy.
McKee with the $100,000 samurai suit. I was like, what?
That shit was dope.
It did look good. I don't know if it looked 100K good.
I was like, if he wore that as Halloween for the rest of his life, he's still not going to get $100,000 worth out of it.
He did say, so I interviewed him this week. I know he talked to a lot of people, but he did say, and I don't know if he repeated it everywhere. I know he mentioned the $100,000 suit, but he said that, like, he's going to set it up in his man cave, and he said he got, like, all the athletes to autograph, like, the book, like, and he's going to cut the pages out with their autographs and, like, frame it behind it.
Thank God you said book. I was going to say, if they signed the suit, I would just be like, bro, sit down. Let's talk. Let's talk about value and keeping things with a value.
Oh, no, man. So it was cool, man. AJ McKee, he wanted to go all out, and he did it. So
yeah, good for Bellator, man. They showed up, man. And I know Coker, you could see in his face just how proud he was.
Proud, yeah.
Dude, that trophy that they had at the end, how effing cool was that?
Now this is going to be silly of me, right? But as they're sitting there, the thought that did cross my mind is, how the hell do you get that home?
Oh, you don't.
It just stays there?
It's going to stay there.
Okay.
I would imagine, well, maybe they'll change it. Maybe that'll be the trophy that passes. But, right. I mean, granted, yes, silly. They have the means. They could chip it back. But, I mean, like, geez.
I know the cost of delivering the trophy. Just like, here, why don't you just leave it here? And just know that engrave my name on it and keep it here.
We'll just treat it every year. You know, go back and forth. We'll just change the plate or something.
You know what's going to be funny is, so here's what's going to be interesting. I'm interested to see, because it did feel like there was positive fan reaction about this. Like, people were excited about it. That's what they were. Now, when Rising comes to the U.S., do you think there's even going to be close to the amount of excitement? Because at that point, you're no longer talking about fighting in a ring. You're no longer talking about being in Japan on New Year's Eve. Now you're just talking about five dudes from this Japanese organization coming over.
It's the strength of the organization. It's the strength of the promotion. Yeah. Like they were in the perfect area that had a great fan base. And that's what we said about co-promotions, being able to introduce somebody to your fan base. Ryzen's got a huge fan base over there. Bellator, you come back to the States, then it's back to the number two.
I know.
You know, I mean, just look at any Bellator fight. It's not like a Bellator event. Their great big tentpole events are very, very cool. Adding Ryzen fighters is not going to change.
It's not going to do anything for it.
It's not going to change that level already, because most people were like, who?
I know.
You know?
I know.
I would love to see it, and it makes sense just to be in the
It just dawned on me, think about that. Because they want
to
come over here because, hey, we want to do it in a Bellator cage, but it really did dawn on me. Maybe they should go back over to Japan and have Bellator put on the event in Japan. Maybe that would be the better play.
That would be a better play.
Like, hey, it's a Bellator cage. We're doing the production. We're doing our stuff, but it's in Japan. That might be the better play, right? Because then there would still. Yeah, and then no take delay because it's their event.
Because it's Bellator's event.
I think that's probably the play.
That would be the smarter play.
If you bring him to the United States, I agree. Because I was like, the whole thing about this event was it was awesome in theory and all that. But at the end of the day, most people didn't really know who the opponents were. You know what I mean?
100%.
So if you bring him back over here, I just 100%. Don't think it'll work. I don't think it'll work.
I think it makes sense to keep it over there. But, yeah, to swap who's actually in the league.
But we get to air it live. It's our cage. It's our production. It's on Showtime. It's whatever.
It might be tough. I mean, because they might still try to push back. Like, you know, without our market, without our broadcast deals, is it really going to do well in the state as well? Because all that lead up and stuff is going to be on the networks over there.
Yep.
You know, it's not like they're going to be like, okay, we're going to show up. We're gonna have this event here, but all the promotion is going to be over in the States. They're still going to be promoted on the same partners and stuff over there. I mean, it's going to be tough, but I do think for the better chance for them to have any sort of legs to make it worthwhile, it's got to be over there.
I agree.
It's got to be over there.
I agree. I think that's the way to do it. I will say, if you didn't check out Fury Pro Grappling 6, do that. It was a fun event, man.
It was fun.
So many UFC athletes on the card and just have a good time. We ended up with some drama behind the scenes, man. There was a little weigh-in confrontation that Phil Rowe – I think that Phil Rowe's Instagram clip of this thing is up to like 7 million views, which is crazy. So it was a lot of fun, man. Definitely, I think it's worth checking out the replay, especially since, look, we still got another week until major events. There is an LFA this week on Friday. There is Muradov Pro Fight League is on UFC Fight Pass as well. The debut of that organization from over in Uzbekistan is this weekend. But the real major events don't start until next week, so maybe it's worth checking out your time. Now, listen, I've been going back and forth on my ideas as to whether or not we should be airing guest interviews and that sort of thing, but I wanted to share this one with you because I had a chance to speak to Jeremy Lucha, who is somebody that I have known for a long time, who's a manager working with Iridium Sports. And I met him years and years and years ago, over a dozen years ago, as part of Tachi Palace fights. I actually broadcast a couple of events out there, and we covered it in the early, early days of MMA Junkie. And so what I wanted to do was play that, because I think there were some really interesting discussion points to be had about the business as a whole and just, man, what it takes to get athletes from something small to something big, you know, which is really a passion of his, and you'll hear about this. I love the passion that he brings to the table, because it really mimics my own in a lot of ways. I think, you know, finding grassroots athletes and seeing them chase their dream, that's what we get to do at CFFC. I absolutely love it. So here is my conversation with Jeremy Lucha.
It is my old friend, Jeremy Luchow, the managing partner of Iridium Sports Agency. And Jeremy, man, you have played, I think, pretty much every role there is to play in this sport. But, man, did you ever see yourself being in the position that you're in now? Was this something you were ever working towards?
Not something I was working towards. I just really, when I first started doing MMA, I just kind of just enjoyed the people and, you know, and enjoyed the sport and just made a lot of friends, and it kind of made work real easy. You know what I mean? It's funny that you say that, because I always joke with people that I've done everything in MMA minus ring girl.
You have, man. And it's crazy, right? The way this journey started, is it accurate? You were a reporter at the time and you took an amateur fight just to write about it. And that's what triggered all of this.
Yeah. I was a reporter for the Hanford Sentinel newspaper. Christian Printup would often call and looking for sports coverage. I mean, this is 15, 16 years ago. You know what I mean? There wasn't a lot of MMA sports coverage at the time. And one of the days he just was like, "Hey man, I got this idea, you know, we're going to have you train for a fight. You know what I mean? You could record it in the newspaper." And I was like, "Man, I don't know. You know, I've never done anything remotely close to this. I was a football guy, you know what I mean? Soccer and stuff." You know, and I reached out to my editor and he was like, "Man, that's a great idea. You know, like you should do it." So I actually trained for 18 months and I lost, I think, like 60 pounds, and trained for 18 months at several different gyms. I did like lots of different types of storylines along the way during that time. And I actually fought professionally my first fight. And then I did it two other times. And then it got beyond the point of it being a story anymore, you know, like if I'm going to continue doing this, I need to really devote time to it. And I just didn't have the time because I had kids. So I was just like, "Man, you know, let me move on to something else, you know what I mean, in the sport and see if I could do it." And at that time, Christian asked if I would come work at Tachi in their events department and, you know, kind of specialize in mixed martial arts for them. So that's what I did.
And obviously that's where our paths first crossed, with the Tachi Palace fights. I mean, obviously the legendary former home of the WEC, but then you guys were operating events. And by the way, I mean, you know, we broadcasted a few of them when I was still with MMA Junkie at the time. And mm-hmm. I thought we put on a couple of really, really good cards. But man, can you just talk about, because I think there's a generation of people that just don't understand. That's kind of like hallowed ground, man. I mean, there were some amazing fights out there. What was that time of your life like for you?
I mean, honestly, like I kind of didn't know what was going on, right? Like, it was Christian left the Palace and they were like, "Hey, we need someone to continue doing MMA." And I had only been working there for maybe 8 or 9 months, you know what I mean? And I was still very new to the sport. So I kind of liken it to, like, I got to kind of learn on the job and learn as a fly as I went. But at the same time, there was lots of tradition there. You know what I mean? I had lots of people's brains that I could pick. You know what I mean? And, you know, and people were very serious about, like, "Hey, don't mess this up, man." You know what I mean? There's a lot of tradition here. The fights have been going on for a long time here. We expect high level fights here, you know? And so I just did a lot. I just immersed myself in, like, lots of video. And I started watching video of fights all over the country. And I would just scout guys and try to get guys to come out to Tachi to fight, because I wanted the best guys possible there, you know. And it was a little different setup there, you know. It's kind of like it wasn't my money, you know what I'm saying, right? It's the casino's money, you know what I'm saying? So it's like it was designed as a marketing tool, not really as a guy, you know. So the budget was different, you know what I mean? We're able to spend money on fights and get guys to come compete there, and it made sense to put super high level UFC quality fights on there, you know, because we were able to pay guys well enough to do that, you know. So it was a really exciting time. But I also just remember it was, you know, I was a little bit of an asshole back then because, you know what I mean, like, I really didn't know what I was doing. And it was like, you know, I think over time I learned to a lot of compassion and stuff like that for the guys and managers and fighters and things like that, you know what I mean? So a lot's changed for me since that time frame.
I love it. Hey, we had the best flyweight division in the world for a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? And that was one of Christian Printup's babies, you know what I mean? That was something that he really wanted to have there. And it just so happened through that process, I got to meet a lot of those guys, and they were great guys. And I was just like, man, I'm going to continue this. You know what I mean? I'm going to continue try to push for this division.
Pretty incredible, man. It's still, I'll be honest with you, it's still one of my favorite divisions. Now, obviously no longer with that organization, but you still are promoting fights at this point, right? 559 fights. Look, not an easy job, right? The job of promoter and running an organization, you know, at any level. But, I mean, is that something that you've done, you know, as a business interest or more of a passion interest?
I do it strictly for the community, and I do it strictly for my staff at this point, you know. I never thought that I would get to the position that I am with Jason at Iridium, to where like you could actually make money as make a living doing this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I don't really need to do 559 fights anymore. But you know, the people that have been with me for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, those people do still need it. You know what I mean? So, and I think it's something that the community still needs. There's not a lot of fights in the area anymore. I know that A1 is coming back and doing a show at Tachi, but you know, there hasn't been a lot of professional fights in the area. And it's just something I really love and enjoy developing talent. Like that's my passion. And so to be able to work with guys at the lowest of levels and say, hey man, getting your blood work on time might be the most important thing you do this fight camp. You know what I mean? Or, hey, speaking to this media outlet and being there on time for an interview might be one of the most important things that you do this fight camp. I think there's so much more to mixed martial arts than going to practice every day, eating right, weighing in and fighting, you know what I mean? And people really just don't know how important all the things outside of that can be to a promoter, which is the guy that's paying you, right? And the guy that wants you on the shows, you know what I mean? So I really try to give my guys at 559 Fights an inside look on what promoters are really wanting so that they can develop good habits, so that when they do go fight professionally, you know, I always have promoters call me up like, man, this is the most professional guy on the card, man. His medicals were done 3 days after he signed his contract, you know? So those are the types of guys that I try to build and create for not only Iridium, but, you know, moving on to the next level as well.
That's so awesome, man. That's such great insight, man. And that's the truth. It's maybe not the most exciting part of the sport, right? But it's such a valuable part of it. And you talk about developing talent. I mean, you guys have placed over 100 athletes into the UFC, which is pretty phenomenal. And I think you touched on a lot there, but I guess I kind of wanted to ask you what I guess your mindset is, your approach. Like, how do you guide? Because, boy, I think there's a big difference between just, you know, getting a guy fights and finding them a place to compete versus actually managing somebody's career and developing them, right? There's a huge difference there. So I guess, you know, you touched on some of the important things there, but what is kind of your mindset, your philosophy, and how you guide somebody from regional level to I'm going to get them into the UFC or one of the other major organizations?
Right. I think the special thing about Jason and I when we came together was that there were so many high-level managers at the time that were dealing with the top of the top, the cream of the crop guys, right? So to find where our value was and where we could, kind of carve out our little spot in the MMA world was really focusing on developing talent at the regional level. And to Jason's credit, it was kind of his vision at the time and just something I was passionate about. We went all in on that, you know what I mean? And I think going all in on, you know, hey, we're not going to chase after the 10-1 guys. We're going to try to get with this 1-0 kid or, you know, this 2-0 kid or whatever the case may be. You know, we went all in on that. And so really it was about developing relationships, right? Starting to work with guys when they're young, when they actually need the help. I mean, a guy doesn't really need that much help getting into the UFC when he's 10-0. A guy needs help when he's 1-0. You know what I mean? So really at that time, you know, and even to this day, you know what I mean? Our focus is on, hey, let's find the high quality characters, guys that are willing to invest in getting medicals done on time, guys that are willing to invest in learning how to speak to the media, you know, working on their social media skills, all these other aspects outside of fighting, you know, and we've done a good job. And I think that's why we have over 100 guys, right? Because we invested in those guys and those are the guys that came up with us. You know what I mean? You know, there's a lot of agencies out there that are just, they're fight fighting agencies, right? They put your name on an email list. You know what I'm saying? And that's great if that's what works for you. You know what I mean? But for some athletes, that doesn't work for them. You know what I mean? They need some attention. They need someone saying, hey, man, this is the reason why we're picking these fights for you, or why we think you should take less money to fight this guy versus taking more money to fight that guy, and be able to give those guys the explanations. I think there's so many guys right now, so many agencies out there that don't really give those explanations to guys because they don't have the time. And fortunately for Jason and I, this is all we do. You know what I mean? We're not doing selling cars on the side or doing real estate or, you know, whatever the case may be. So I have time to speak to 40, 50 guys a day and tell them why, hey, this is why we're doing this and why we're making these moves.
That's so awesome, man. And I know that you're also, like you said, you're always looking for talent that you can develop. So you're looking at the guys that aren't even in mixed martial arts yet, right? I mean, you're looking at collegiate wrestling. And, oh, by the way, just so I can make myself feel old, your son is wrestling in college right now. Am I accurate with that? Like,
yeah.
I remember this man in like elementary school. And yeah. Now, it's insane.
Right. Yeah. I think I always have been looking at collegiate wrestling and looking for athletes over there. But it was hard to develop relationships with those guys because, you know, being in college, they couldn't really talk to us too much. You know what I mean? There wasn't a lot we could do for them. And then from there, they were going on and pursuing their Olympic dreams and stuff like that. So now with the opening of all these NIL deals, we're able to reach these guys at an earlier stage in their career, develop a relationship with them, offer protection in a way too, because some of these guys don't know what they're signing, right? They're signing deals and signing their image and likeness away forever, you know what I mean, for a $50 deal, and they have no idea what they're signing. So being able to step in, give these guys that protection now, and start their crossover with mixed martial arts so much earlier, right? We're doing camp series now where we're going to have our athletes do summer camps over the years, but we're putting them in strategic places where now our high-end wrestling guys are going to be able to cross-train at certain mixed martial arts gyms, you know what I mean? To see, hey, this is something that I want to pursue, or this is not something that I want to pursue, you know what I mean? But just giving a lot of those guys those opportunities to see that and start feeling it at an early age, getting some of that cross-training early on. But most importantly, in anything, developing a relationship. This is the relationship business, you know? So we're developing relationships with top-tier athletes now, coming right out of high school, and we're able to help these guys and get them to the next level in the sport.
It's so awesome to see. And Jeremy, you tell me, because I deal with more of the athletes than the coaches, but you know, there was a day, you talk about, you know, early days, the collegiate wrestling programs, like the coaches, you know, they shunned mixed martial arts, right? They didn't want to talk about it. It seems to me now, you know, obviously I was honored to be a part of a collegiate wrestling event on UFC Fight Pass and get right. to talk to, it seems to me now that the wrestling community is understanding, like, hey, those MMA guys, it's not a bad place. It's not the enemy. Like, we don't need to stay away from them. In fact, this is a hell of an option for our athletes, because elite level wrestlers are in a great starting position. So from your point of view, does it seem like the community is really, you know, embracing mixed martial arts a lot more now?
So I think early on where the trouble might have been a little bit is that the U.S. was really pushing to become a powerhouse at the Olympic level, right? And now we've become one of those powerhouses. So now that conversation is, you know, hey, we're not going to put all our eggs in the Olympic basket. Now we have these guys that are going to be the mainstays there, right? The Jordan Burroughs, the Dave Taylors, those guys. Those are mainstays, right? So now those guys that are 5 and 6 on the ladder, let's push those guys towards MMA now. And I think we're starting to be that second tier where coaches are wanting to send their guys that want to do that stuff, you know? So I feel like that's kind of what that transition has been, you know? And now with the NIL deals, being able to talk to coaches and say, hey, we aren't scumbags that are just trying to look as soon as your guy graduates, take them out of your program, you know what I mean? Because a lot of these guys rely on those guys that graduate from the program to stay there, you know, train with their team for the Olympics and things like that. But what it does is it helps their program kind of continue to have high-level athletes in the program that makes their other guys better, you know? And I don't think we're not looking to take take guys away from wrestling. We want to give them a place once they're finished wrestling that they're going to be able to come to. But we've built a relationship during that time frame.
That's awesome, man. Well, Jeremy, dude, I'm so happy to see your continued success, man. And the way people talk about you behind the scenes, man, I know you don't always get to hear that, but much respected, man. A lot of love for what you do out there. And I guess the last thing I would ask you is, you know, I know how many athletes you guys represent. I know how much you guys do. I mean, if there's an up-and-coming fighter that says, hey, that seems like the right place for me, like, can they reach out to you? Or are you, like, too busy? Is it like, dude, I ain't got time to talk to you right now? Like, what can somebody do?
I'm never too busy to have a conversation with somebody, especially an athlete that's looking to get to the next level, whether they sign with me or not. There's plenty of guys that never signed, and I continue to help them to this day because I just really love seeing guys get to the next level. Like, that is I don't do any drugs, I don't drink, I don't do anything else. That's my high. You know what I mean? Like, man, watching a guy like Alex Perez from fight zero all the way to fighting for a world title fight. You know, the Ricky Simone's fight zero all the way to, you know, being a top 10 type guy. You know what I mean? So I love those types of things, man. So any guys that are interested, you know, I'm down to hear it.
I love it, man. And boy, I tell you, I love, you know, calling guys fights at the regional level and then seeing Chase their passion on up to the top. I mean, it's so cool to see people living their dream and chasing it. Then, I mean, you didn't even know you had this dream, Jeremy. And then through a bizarre turn of events, here you are at MMA Life.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, again, I always preach to people, man, this is the relationship business. And when you form those relationships with people, it makes going to those events that much sweeter. You know what I mean? I never have a day where I'm like, man, I don't want to get out of bed and do this. I'm always, boom, out of bed, ready to go on the computer, searching, watching, you know, building, trying to build careers and stuff like that. So, you know, those are the types of people you want in your corner, obviously, right? Because they love and care about you. You know what I mean? If you're not in the back shedding tears with your guys after they lose, then you're not in this sport for the right reasons, I believe.
That's so well said. Awesome. Jeremy, man, congrats on everything and congrats on what's still to come. You guys are building an amazing organization over there at Iridium, and just friend to friend, man to man, dude, I'm happy to see what you've been able to accomplish and wish you nothing but the best moving forward.
All right, brother. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
All right. That was Jeremy Lucha of Iridium Sports Agency. Like I said, I just a guy that, man, I've worked alongside of for many years now, and I think has a real passion for it. And I think it comes across in what he's talking about. And I just love hearing about the business side of things from people that are actually out there doing it and what their approach is. And I thought some of his advice to young fighters is just so spot on. And that organization, especially Iridium, has done a phenomenal job of kind of getting people to that next level. You know what I mean? It's one of the biggest groups out there for sure, but they've really done a good job of kind of grassroots identifying athletes and getting them all the way to the UFC and other major promotions level. So anyway, I had a chance to talk to him. I thought I'd share that with you because, again, it's kind of a different side of things. So, all right, Cole Coffey, it's been just an awful start to 2023. It just has to get better. I believe it's going to get better. There's a lot going on, man. You know, one championship, of course. We've talked about the moves that they've been making. You know, they're going to make their U.S. debut, which I think is huge. Obviously, the Amazon Prime thing continues to be big here in North America. Yeah. You got the PFL that's going to launch the Challenger Series again here very soon. So, I mean, normally we think about having to wait until later in the year, but, I mean, they're about to come hot and heavy with those Challenger Series cards here in just a couple of weeks. The UFC is getting back to it. Bellator is going to network television. You know, there's been discussions for a while that maybe they could potentially change ownership. There's been discussions that maybe they could change up their TV deal, which don't want to take a shot at Showtime, but I would love to see Bellator maybe get on something a little bit more.
How many networks have we seen them on?
A lot.
Many.
A lot.
It's like a yearly thing, it feels.
I mean, it's crazy when you think. I mean, they started on ESPN Deportes back in the day you think about really going into it. But, yeah, I would love to see them not behind the premium paywall channel, man. I just believe – and, again, it's that double-edged sword, right? Because Showtime, I mean, it's all under the same family, but the – you know, the economics show that the money moves from here to there, so you need that. But, you know, I think the viewership on some of these other platforms would be better for them. You know, I don't know that's necessarily a full-time premium cable, but listen, they got that changing, and they're doing a big show in L.A. here in February. And
I don't think I'll be there.
There's a lot of good things to look at.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be there.
Hmm. I think I might make the drive out there to L.A.
You're going to cover MMA? You're actually going to go on site? You're actually going to go on site?
Touche, sir.
Wow, 2023 is looking up.
Touche.
I thought you got rid of that in 2022.
That's close enough. You know what I mean? I'll make it down there for a little bit. Touche. I'll be at the UFC Apex next week.
You're like, I can go out there during the day. I can come back and then hop on a plane and go do commentary somewhere.
I mean, look, if a commentary gig shows up, I'll just tease it. I'm not going to be the one to make the formal announcement, but contracts are in place. Travel's already been booked. I do have another brand organization that I'll be working with in 2023, so I'm excited about it. I'm excited about it. I'll let them make the official announcement, but I'm excited to go do this. And,
wow,
and once it's all official,
CFFC,
we can talk about it.
LFC. And then some other C.
Fury Professional Grappling.
Oh, yeah. I guess I kind of.
Hopefully, maybe some collegiate wrestling. Trying to do a few more of those this year.
Jeez.
I mean, you know, I'm trying to shift over to that
John
side
Morgan
of things.
John Morgan is not going to work any UFC events on the ground this
year. I mean, if they're in Vegas, I'll be there. As long as I don't have a commentary gig going. Listen, yes, as our careers continue to change and transform, if you like what you're listening to, do us a favor. Log in, rate us, review us. Certainly appreciate the feedback always. If you want to step your game up to the next level, head on over to patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow, exclusive home of the and a half episodes, where we recap each and every UFC. And now that this break is almost over, it's time to get back to the and a half episodes. And, of course, we try to be a little bit more involved with that community over there and share some of our personal things and all that. So,
you know,
appreciate each and every supporter over there.
You know, and then this year, you know, I'm ready to start working on my dynasty of working on the third MMA Junkie staff pick. They really surprised me. Actually, yesterday they sent out a little tweet, but it's funny. It went into our social media chat. They're like, got a fun graphic coming out. And I'm thinking like, oh, man, what is this going to be? What is this going to be? And then they really surprised me. So they put it out there that I was the two-time
winner, I believe. So we started picking in late 2011. So we were purchased. Actually, it might have been 2000. I don't think we did, because we were purchased by Gannett in 2011. It's easy to remember because the date that we signed the paperwork was 11-11-11. So it was super easy, November 11th, 2011. And I think they made us start doing picks. And I will say, I'll be honest with you, they made us start doing picks. Like, me and Dan Stupp never wanted to do picks. We were just like, hey, man, you know, it's not really necessary. And, and they were like, no, you got to do picks. And I think 2012 is the year we started doing picks. And until this year, there had never been a two-time winner of the MMA Junkie Stat Picks until Cold Coffee got it done.
I'm telling you. Then they put that tweet out, and it's funny. Then Anik laid in, and I didn't even think about that. He said I was 100 picks over 500%.
It's pretty solid.
That's solid.
That's solid. I mean, listen, every year, if I go back to my, you know, I picked obviously from 2012 to 2022.
Yeah.
I think I counted it out before I left because I was kind of curious as I was leaving. I was like, let me get all these, but while I still have access to the documents, and it totaled out to like 65.5% over the course of 10 years.
That's crazy.
You know what I mean? Which I would think from a gambling perspective could be profitable.
That's pretty good.
But here we go back to the story of I've never felt comfortable gambling because I always was like, this seems like a moral issue to me that a journalist shouldn't necessarily, not because I felt it was a moral issue, but just because like I then knew there was no way I could come be unbiased about what I saw because like my money's invested in it. Like I now have a vested interest in this.
Yeah.
And I never did it. And now, of course, never once, again, as I said before, I'll just claim, you know, not claim ignorance. I'll admit ignorance. Never realizing there was a thing that was like, if you have non-public information, you are not legally allowed to bet on fights. I just thought that was always, bro, you got better sources than most, so you know what I mean? If you heard some stuff, tell the line makers they better get the same sources you do, you know what I mean? So, but, man, all that story is going to continue to unfold in 2023, of course, but all that aside, you weren't betting. You were just putting your reputation on the line,
just
making these
the
picks.
Line. Telling
you. Two-time champion.
It's funny because after Anik responded to, I think I got like 100 new followers, which
wow.
for me is like, that's normally like 5 years worth of new followers. 100 followers.
Wait until the first time they give a show and hear your analysis and you're like, that's why I picked them.
Why'd you pick that one female fight? Oh, that was my.
Like, this is the dude we're following?
If you followed me for your gambling picks, it's probably not the smartest move.
I mean,
unless you
granted,
want my pervy
you
picks.
Have a track record of success. It's just true. If you really dive into the process, you might – like, the amount of time that Cold Coffee spends breaking down film versus the amount of time Dan Tom does, there's probably a minor difference in process.
There's a slightly different slightly different, but – hey, I mean, everybody's got their winning ways, you know?
I love it, man. I love it. Well, congratulations to you. And now,
dude,
I mean, you could go for the back-to-back. You could go for the first three-time winner.
Both.
Dynasty.
Both.
Dynasty being built here.
Let's do this. Let's do this.
Well, listen, it's still gray and cold outside.
Yeah.
But somehow I have found a way to not be in such a gloomy place right now. I believe 2023 is going to be looking up.
Yes,
and
we did start gloomy. Now I'm feeling positive.
I'm feeling better now. I'm feeling better now. We talked it all out. It was a good therapy session. We appreciate you joining in. Hopefully, it helped you all as well. Hopefully, this year improves. And thanks for listening.